Hey, everybody, welcome back to Champion Reads. We're super excited that you are listening in. It's been a few minutes since we've gone live again, but we appreciate you. And we're going to continue our conversations with an incredible book. And I'd like to show it here in 2 seconds. But I'm really excited to welcome the team back, and we're excited to talk. This has got Ian Sturmer in the house, and we've also got William Blake, which is fantastic. I wanted to see if I can grab the slideshow and show the book. I may not have it queued up here. That's my fault for doing that. All right, but we are talking about this book right here, The Amazing Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill. And if you remember last time, we talked about doing an overview of this book. And with Outwitting the Devil, I mean, this was written back in the 1930s, and Napoleon's wife feared so much for the damnation of their own souls that if this book was published, that it would harm their family, harm their spirits, and influence them in a negative way. And it's because the book is about a conversation with the devil. But in this conversation, it is more like it's more articulated that this is a more of a dream. This is more of a vision. This is just something that Napoleon Hill might have imagined. He might have, you know, played this along in his head, or he might have actually had a vision and really experienced this. But all that I know and understand is that this book is a transcription of a conversation that Napoleon has with the devil. And he is of the power that he is able to ask questions and interview the devil. And the devil has to answer these questions. He cannot not answer. And because he is bound by the rules of this conversation, Napoleon uses this as an opportunity to expose the devil's works on how he gets so many followers and how he deceives people and to expose him. And today we want to talk about two major concepts, and there are two concepts that I have come to like really be aware of in my life, learn and trust and love. And also that these are concepts as well that are important for you to be aware of. And we're going to share some examples and some ideas, and we definitely want to help you dive into this. But we're diving in right from the point where Napoleon Hill has began his conversations and is unearthing some of the secrets that the devil has used to help to cause so many people to do bad works, to sin, to, I guess, fall away from the path of righteousness or the path of God. And it's a very, very interesting read. Now, you're probably wondering, like, why am I listening to this? Is this a religious conversation? Is this a religious book? And in many sense, no, but in many sense, if you accept that there is a God, if you accept that there is a Jesus Christ, then you accept that there is a devil or a Satan, right? So just knowing that, that's the premise. But even if you don't believe in that, you understand, just like the David and Goliath story, you know that a young man named David defeated a giant named Goliath, okay? And it's a story. So if you can accept the fact that David and Goliath is a story, you can also accept the fact that there's this opposition in the world to light, and that is darkness. And that could be, you know, the devil himself, right? So just play along with us and go along, because it really is, in my opinion, it is a very earth-shattering and eye-opening encounter. And whether it's true, made up, or false, this conversation will inspire you, motivate you, and give you insight to yourself and your actions, which I think is very, very important. So let's move on with the conversations, but I'm going to take this off and oops, I pushed the wrong person. I removed Willie. But let's go ahead and get started. So there's this concept that Napoleon Hill talks about called drifting, and drifting is how it's like the devil's number one tactic. Okay. You guys might think that the devil is so evil that he uses major calamities and major earth events and so many horrific ways to destroy good people. But in reality, what the devil exposes here in his interview with Napoleon is that it is by simple little ways that he gets into our lives. It's like an infestation. It just takes one little parasite to grow thousands of parasites. And the way that he does this is by planting seeds of evil in the minds and in the thoughts of people. And he does this through all of the things that might appear as good and positive and healthy for all of us. But he sprinkles in a little bit of his devilishness into each of these things so that they are sort of backed up, coated, covered up, and unrecognized as his work. And slowly but surely, the human race falls into a space of what they call drifting. And we as drifters have been on this path of drifting like driftwood along the just path of water for forever until we hit dry land, right? And it is a concept that we dive a little bit into this conversation. But drifting is how the devil ultimately uses all of the things around us to keep us from achieving our goals, from achieving greatness, from doing the things that we want to do, and so forth. And it can be under the demise, or under the disguise is a better word, of things you think are actually good. And he has got a long list of great examples, and we'll get into that. But I just wanted to talk about the drifting. And I'll start off by sharing a story. This one's probably the most relatable. And this is also a Bible reference. But most people who know the Bible know the story of the prodigal son. The son who wavered in his faith and wandered away and left his family and went off into the world. And to cut to the chase, you speed up the story. And all of a sudden, boom. He basically wakes up in a pig cell. Okay. He's hanging out with the piggies, and he's sitting there in mud and poop and feces, and he's being kissed on the face by the pig that he snuggled that night before. Just kidding. I don't really know those details. And all of a sudden he said something that was pretty profound. He woke up. He said, and I came to myself and I came to myself. So that phrase right there was this enlightenment, this knowledge that they're awake and that they're coming aware of their surroundings. And in that moment, the prodigal son realized that he was at the lowest of his lows. Therefore, he has decided to go back home and to fix things. So that's the premise of the prodigal son story and the coming aware of himself. And I like that story because that story reminds me of what it means to be a drifter and then to recognize your drifting habits. You become aware, you grow an awareness and an observation of your present state and what you're doing and how you've done it. And you're able to make changes from that. So, you know, the quick answer to the question is can drifters, you know, exit drifting? And it is yes. But anyways, that's the beginning premise of that. And a little bit about drifting in itself. But let me open up my book and share a few more examples. Ian, would you like to add, or Willie, would you guys like to add anything to the idea of drifting?
Yeah, I was going to jump in with that. And you, at the end, you hit on the second half of it that I was thinking of. So drifting is just kind of, you're going along with the flow, whatever you think you're supposed to do. And it's not always being just carried along, but sometimes it's just what you think you're supposed to do without really thinking about it, if that makes sense. You know, the prodigal son story, the son thought happiness came from riotous living and wealth and all of these things. And he just went along with that until he hit a point that he had to stop and think about it himself. So I'd say the counterpoint to drifting is awareness. Are you aware of what's going on, or are you just accepting what everyone else is telling you is supposed to happen, what you're supposed to do? You know, how often do you go through life and say, well, we're supposed to graduate high school, go to college, get a job, work up the corporate ladder. And then at some point we may realize that we're not actually happy with that just because we thought that was what we were told to do. We hadn't stopped to think what we want, to look for that awareness behind it. And that's kind of Napoleon Hill's idea that, you know, the devil's plan is to keep you from being aware, keep you from thinking about it, and just put you on the path that the world sets out for you. And then you assume you'll be happy in life. And we're usually not, because none of us are exactly what the world tells us we're supposed to be. No one in the world is actually the way the world says. We're all individuals. So by being aware of it, we overcome this drifting. And not that I've given away the whole secret of the book with that statement, but instead of just drifting along, doing what everyone says we're supposed to, what we think we're supposed to do, do we take time to stop and say, what's the truth behind it? What do I want to do? And what are the tools, the path that's going to get me there? In the prodigal son case, it's giving up the potential of riotous living and the happiness of the world to go back to be a servant for his father. And he's willing to do that because he realizes that's that stability, that being near family is what's going to bring him the real happiness. So that was kind of my thought on there.
Awesome. Anything you want to add, Willie?
Yeah. Based off of basically what both of you said, drifting is it's a phenomenal perspective when you first hear about it. And the first time when I read the book with Napoleon Hill saying that 98% of us are drifting and only 2% of the people are actually not drifting or going after what they want, I found it interesting because I'm like, okay, so am I in that 2% with my ego being like, yeah, or the most likely case, am I in that 98% missing the ball and just letting waves drift? So having that perspective for me, it's been eye-opening because now I'm thinking about what I'm drifting in, and it just made me more aware of it. So if I could just add anything to the conversation, it'd be, it just made me more aware of knowing about drifting and hypnotic rhythm as we get into it, that the ability of to drift and that the devil is working on it, that it's out there. And the best thing that we can do is one, be aware, which is the first step. And then two, continue to learn and continue to figure out what's going on and take actions against it to get what we truly desire.
Go ahead, Ian.
Yeah, I like something Willie mentioned in there about the 2% of people are not are aware, really, and 98% are drifting. But I think that's not, it's a very fluctuating number within our own lives. And I could probably say that 98% of my life is drifting and 2% of my life is being aware. And where that fits moves back and forth. And it just makes me think of, you know, TV commercials. You know, I watch a commercial for McDonald's and I think, ooh, a Big Mac sounds good. I know it's not going to be good. It never is. But I watch the commercial and it sounds good and I want a Big Mac, because I'm drifting along with what everything around me is saying is right. The commercial is saying, go eat a Big Mac. So I feel like I want to do it. It's easy to drift with that and stop and say, you know what? That fresh peach I just got at the farmer's market is going to taste so much better than a Big Mac. But I have to stop and think about that as opposed to just accepting what we're shown. You know, not to blame the media for everything, but the media is responsible for everything wrong in the world. So, you know, I'll blame them anyways. But the world around us is always telling us this, and bits and pieces we can learn to be more aware and stop and think about in our own life and move beyond just that 2% awareness of ourselves. So,
yeah, great thoughts. I want to add something in some context from the book. Napoleon asks the devil, this is fun, in like the 70th page, you know, it gets into the Q&A factor and it's the back and forth banter, which really makes this entertaining. But Napoleon asks, and by the way, the devil makes, because the devil agrees to the interview, the devil makes Napoleon agree to some circumstances. And the devil refers to Napoleon as Mr. Earthbound, and Napoleon is required to address the devil with Your Highness, and royalty, right? Because he has such an ego. But Napoleon asks this question. He says, Mr. Earthbound says, tell me first about your most clever trick, the one you use to ensure the greatest number of people. And they banter back and forth a little bit about like, don't make me do this. But here's the answer to that he first gives. He says, my greatest weapon over human beings consists of two secret principles by which I gain control of their minds. I will speak first of the principle of habit, through which I silently enter the minds of people. By operating through this principle, I establish, I wish I could avoid using this word, the habit of drifting. When a person begins to drift on any subject, he is headed straight towards the gates of what you earthbound call hell. And just to stop there for a minute, that is a profound statement. A lot of people don't understand the principle of mind control. People are so, I guess, distant from the thoughts of the subject of brainwashing, because it seems like a torture tactic in wars and in, you know, in countries where that's their, you know, way of getting information. Mind warping is considered a cultish approach to control and government, right? And so there's this like misconcept in our society about the words mind control. And there's actually a really, really great book. Let me pull it up on my Audible here. It is based on one of the world's top leaders in the study of mind control. And his name is Stephen Hassan. And Stephen Hassan has a very unique story. A Jewish man who was recruited by a cult to, they were called the Moonies. And that's a Korean/Japanese type cults that arose here in America. But not to get into the cult conversation, but essentially I just want to talk about mind control. I'm trying to find it here. It's called Combating Cult Mind Control by Stephen Hassan. And it's a fantastic book because, again, talking about this concept that you might be lured in to whatever it is that you seem as normal, and your mind is being controlled. You may not feel like you have this power of ability to choose and to make decisions and choice. In some Christian religions, they call it agency, the power of agency that God gave to Adam in the Garden of Eden, right? But again, not trying to get into a religious conversation here, but mind control is one of the slickest, one of the most silent killers of our day, because it is so simple to manipulate the minds of individuals without them actually knowing that they're being manipulated. It's not going to feel bad or disgusting or hard or awful in the moment, because there is sort of a normalcy to it, or there's sort of an environmental expectation behind it. And that's one of the ways that the devil uses it. And he uses it through the power of habit. And we know, as entrepreneurs and business owners and professionals and great people, that the power of habit is a good thing. It is an absolutely good thing. But good habits lead to good results. Bad habits, or silent habits, or distant habits, or habits that lead away from your results, are just as deadly. because they can put you far off the path. When you are on a sailing ship, okay, you're sailing the seas and you put down your rudder, there's a, I don't know if I'm calling it the right thing, for lack of better terms, I'm calling it a rudder, but I'm sure it has a technical term. There's basically a device that is under the boat. It's like a little sheath, okay? And the sheath is meant to steer your boat in the right direction. And if you are just off by like a centimeter, even a small decimal of a millimeter, you know, an hour later, you could be a mile off your path, because that needs to point towards the direction that you would like to go. And if you're off just barely, you will slowly drift off course. You will no longer be on the straight path, the closest path to achieving what your destination. And this is this is his plan. This is the devil's work of getting us off course from what we want to do. So it's a very, very, very interesting concept that you would think that the devil would throw big storms and things at us, but no, he is working us in many small ways, which is, you know, both scary, but also we don't want to scare anyone. We want you to just be aware. We want you to wake up in that pig cell and say, oh, I've understood. I understand. I see where I'm at, and I can make choices for myself. Because mind control doesn't mean you are incapable of making your own decision. Mind control means is that you've been deceived to think and believe that you are making your own decisions, but really you are following a particular herd mentality. What would you like to add to that, Ian?
Yeah, I was going to build on your sailboat analogy for a little bit. And part of this idea of drifting is teaching us that we're not in control. And if you're on a sailboat, the wind is blowing in a certain direction, and we can't control what direction that wind blows. It's going to blow that direction no matter what we do. And we have a rudder that we can use some. But more than that, we have a sail. And I'm not a sailor, so I don't know all the details here. But as I understand it, if you know how to manipulate a sail, you can actually make the boat move almost directly into the wind by using those tools. So how often in your life do we say, well, the wind is blowing south, so I can only go south. Maybe I can twist a little bit, but pretty much I'm stuck going south. We don't realize that there's tools we can control, like the rudder and the sail, that can allow us to go almost north, almost directly against that wind, because of the way the laws of physics work. So do we allow ourselves to drift and say, well, the wind is blowing south, so that's where I've got to go, and maybe I can just make the best of it by going a little to the left or a little to the right? Or do we take the time to understand those laws and how much power we actually do have, that we can go the opposite direction and not drift, but take control and use that wind that seems opposed to us, but use it to our advantage? That was my thought.
I love that. And just to add, just kind of like the final stick of confidence on that term, the devil also answers in the book. He says, I can best define the word as drift by saying that people who think for themselves never drift, while those who do little or no thinking for themselves are drifters. A drifter is one person who permits himself to be influenced and controlled by circumstances outside of his own mind. He would rather let me occupy his mind and do the thinking than go to the trouble of thinking for themselves. A drifter is one who accepts whatever life throws in his way without making a protest or putting up a fight. He doesn't know what he wants from life and spends all of his time getting just that. A drifter has lots of opinions, but they are not his own. Most of them are supplied by me. That's again, and I know we've kind of thrown out this idea and how off course you can get through drifting. And the answer is yes, you can get back on course. Of course, you can come to yourself, and you all have the ability. If you have a brain and you can breathe, you can be a non-drifter. But you may want to take an evaluation. You may want to sit back and say, okay, where in my life am I drifting? Because just because you can think for yourself doesn't always mean you are not fully a drifter. We drift in so many ways. Ian threw out some statistics about his life earlier. And I think that in many ways, we all want to choose an easier path, the path of least resistance in a lot of things. There's a great example here, and I think it relates. And time check, guys, I gotta head out in just a few minutes. But the example of my wife and I call it one touch theory. And one touch theory is when, like, for example, I am the one in our family that does the dishes. But every now and then, if there are dishes in the dishwasher and I haven't unloaded the dishwasher yet, I let a couple dishes stack up in the sink and we just let them soak for a day or two, right? And I know it sounds disgusting, but it just happens. But the one touch theory is once you touch something, you need to fulfill it. And one of my favorite quotes ever comes from this book. And Willie and I both love this quote. It's never leave unfinished thoughts in the mind. Be definite in everything you do. Be definite in everything you do. Never leave an unfinished thought in your mind. And that's the one touch theory. If I am eating and I take the plate to the sink, the next thing that needs to do for it to finish its route is to be washed and put in the dishwasher so that it could be unloaded and put back into the cupboards. That is the process. That is eating, right? That is not just, you know, consuming and then walking away. And a lot of times I'll let that happen, but you know, over days and times, like now I'm left with a giant stack of pots and pans that I have to clean. And no one loves cleaning a giant stack of pots and pans. Like that's not our favorite thing to do ever. But at the same time, it's something that I let happen. So having a one touch theory in your life is saying, once I have this in my hands, I need to go through the entire process. It might take a little bit of extra time, but that's me thinking for myself rather than allowing myself to drift into a status where I let things slide. And that's an important thing to remember because you do have the ability to control your own mind rather than it be controlled by what appears to be the circumstances of, oh, I'll just do it later, or I'll get to it. And we do that all the time. And that's a really great place to start and practice by touching one thing and making sure you see it through the end. Just like mail, don't put mail aside, open it up, go through your mail and make sure that you've taken care of everything in that moment so that it's no longer. There's just an idea for you guys.
Yeah, I love that. And just to kind of build on that, you know, habits can be good or bad. You can easily fall into a bad habit, but if you're taking awareness into it and you're building a good habit, you say, I don't want to have a dish or sink full of dirty dishes. So I'm going to take the time to build a good habit to have that one touch philosophy. And once you've done that, you can allow yourself to drift positively, which is, I guess, what he calls hypnotic rhythm in a positive sense. You can build up those good ones and free your mind of the thoughts by following those good habits without having to worry about them. And then you're putting yourself on a good path and freeing up your ability to be more aware of the things around you. You're no longer distracted by that big pile of dirty dishes, but you're able to focus on other things that are more important in the house because you've taken time to be aware of a problem, build a habit, or is it called a hypnotic rhythm, to overcome that problem of dishes stacking up, and then able to use that awareness in more important things in our life, because we all know a messy house is going to clutter up our mind as well and distract us from the important things that we should be focusing on. So I love the idea of building up the positive habits so you don't need to think about those. They don't become something to weigh down on your mind anymore. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, like I never want this to be like us scaring people into submission. We want people to understand that there are habits and actions that you can take to absolutely overcome mind control. I want to dive into this deeper, but we are running out of time. And I want to thank you guys for your conversations, even on this drifting bit, because it is very important. It is a valuable process, and I think we really need to understand it. And so I invite our team to, we'll do another session on the Outwitting the Devil. We'll get in more to the hypnotic rhythm and conversations about that, and also some of the other major secrets that will blow your minds away. But I definitely want to thank you guys for your time. Willie, any last thoughts? We got to wrap up here in 60 seconds.
Last thought I want to add is, in all honesty, when it comes to, you gave the example of doing the dishes, going from point A to point B to point C, because, and then to point D, because D is where it's supposed to be. If you take that little extra time initially, in the long term, it's quicker than if you just leave it and have to go back and do from A to B, leave it, come back, B to C. So it's just funny how in the short term, it seems like it's will take a little bit longer, but in the long term, it actually gives you more time to do to other things.
I love that. Thank you so much, Willie. Appreciate you guys. And thank you for diving into this. I know we're wrapping this up in a hurry, but I want to get more into this. And it's one of my all time favorite books. And it's not because of this weird concept. It's because it taught me so much about myself. And I can't wait to continue the conversation. So tune in next week on the Champion Reads podcast, where we discuss Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill, our third discussion on the topic, and we'll have a lot more to go with that. Appreciate you guys. We'll talk to you soon. And here is our awesome outro.